who might have heard my diatribe.
To be announced.
Here on Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate May 12th. On this date, in the year 1385, the planets Jupiter and Saturn and a crescent moon appeared in front of the constellation Cancer. The early English poet Geoffrey Chaucer must have seen them because he mentioned them in a long narrative poem that's sometimes called the first true English novel. Chaucer lived at a time when most literature was written in Latin. He chose to write in the language of the common people, what we today call English. This was also during a time when superstitious people believed that the positions and movements of celestial objects affected people or things happening on Earth. In Chaucer's story, a prince of Troy and a young widow are in love. They're trapped together overnight in the same house due to a raging thunderstorm, which medieval astrology attributed to Saturn, Jupiter, and the moon being together in the constellation Cancer. Chaucer really could have seen this pattern in the night sky on today's date in the year 1385, around the time that scholars believe he wrote his novel. It's known that Chaucer was familiar with the movements of celestial objects. He later wrote an instructional manual, also in English, for the astrolabe, a device used for sighting and predicting the positions of heavenly bodies. During Chaucer's time, astrological superstition dominated people's views of the heavens. But curiosity about things in the sky eventually led, a century and a half later, to the birth of modern astronomy. This is Stardate, our writer-producer, Deborah Bird, and we want to remind you that to keep up to date on astronomy, you can call 1-900-370-2777. The call costs $1 a minute. The message changes each week. For the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
And if you're stupid enough to call something that costs $1 a minute, then you belong up in the heavens anyway. My personal opinion is you should never call 900 numbers. I don't know where Joel is coming from. I think he's sold out. This is brain damage, and we're never going to sell out, are we? No, we'll hit the wrong button already sometimes, but we won't sell out.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Brain damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
Germany Today. People, places, and politics. The arts, too. From Bonn, Berlin, and New York. Timely coverage of the events and issues inside Germany that are important to America.
This is Germany Today, April 1990. I'm Lee Murphy in New York with Peggy Troutman, Joseph Fleming, Don Jordan, Kathy Fields, and Steve Murchinski reporting from across Germany. Paul Nitze, the American arms negotiator for two presidents, is upbeat about a reunited Germany. Still, some question German resolve on NATO, and a Bonn official says, "Don't worry, we're with the alliance." Are American companies missing the boat when it comes to East German investments? The wall, hated while up, heaps profits on those who are disposing of it, and some of the cash goes to a good cause. East German youths talk about reunification and what it means to them. Details in a moment on Germany Today. That Germany will someday reunite is the certain reality chasing an inevitable concept. But there are those who continue to question what kind of Germany will ultimately emerge, where its loyalties might lie, and where its politics are rooted. On that point, William Wallace, who's deputy director of the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London, is quoted as saying, "Their commitment to democracy is clearly solid. They constantly worry that their institutions are not perfect, but in fact they work better than in most other democracies." Close quote. America's top arms negotiator for two previous administrations was in Germany, where we talked with him, asking for his assessment of the German future.
The world is moving into a new era, and West Germany will have to learn to lead and lead properly. That's the prognosis Paul Nitze offers based on his over 50 years of government service. America's diplomat and longtime arms negotiator says the events of the last months have forced decision makers in both East and West to reconsider their worldviews and rethink their strategies, mainly in an effort to ready for the emergence of a new kind of Germany.
Germany's role will be a different role. It certainly will be the most important power economically, politically, and militarily on the continent of Europe. And I hope that in that role it will see that it has responsibilities of a different kind than it had before. You know, a big man in the community of nations.
NHTSA says American relations will remain as strong and as meaningful as they ever were, even after a solution to the division of Germany is found. Contrary to some of his German peers, NHTSA does not favor the inclusion of East Germany under the NATO umbrella. He says it would only complicate the move toward unity already in progress. In Bonn, I'm Peggy Trautman.
NATO or neutrality? That is at least one of the question marks that punctuate most conversations these days involving reunification. One Bonn official offers an answer that should please Washington and our Western allies.
West Europeans are awaiting anxiously the answer to two questions. One is, can NATO survive the unification of Germany? The other is related. Will the price of unity be the departure of the 245,000 American troops from West Germany? The very thought of German neutrality is a nightmare for most West European nations. They fear the possible expansion of German power if a unified country is not part of a security system that includes a strong American presence. There is not the slightest doubt that the West German government wants American troops to stay. Defense Department spokesman, Naval Captain Stefan Long, explains why.
History has proved that they are a very important stability factor within a European security system. So it is common policy in Germany that we welcome American troops on our soil, and we believe that for the foreseeable future there is a necessity to have them on our ground.
But the Soviets have said repeatedly that NATO forces must leave a unified Germany, and an increasing number of West Germans are asking if the Russians still are a threat to their security. In addition, a public opinion poll shows most East Germans favor neutrality. Joseph Fleming in Bonn.
Metaphorically, at least, Germany may now be described as one long interconnecting autobahn, with business executives steering their firms into the fast lane headed east. But where are American companies? Still apparently on the entrance ramp.
West German industry has its sights not only focused on East Germany, but also on Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary. American industry, on the other hand, seems so far to be favoring Poland and Hungary, but almost entirely neglecting the unfolding opportunities in East Germany. As Robert Rodem of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Germany puts it,
"The impression that I get from business people over there is that they just don't know what's going on. They don't have access to information. And from the government is that they have so much to do with Poland and Hungary, they're so overworked at the moment that they haven't even considered the GDR yet."
Right, but wouldn't you say that there certainly are business opportunities?
I would certainly say so. As a matter of fact, we've just formed a GDR committee, and one of the first things that we will do is put out a position paper on the issue and send it to, you know, people in the States.
American companies have made lively use of the risk insurance provided by OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, for business with Poland and Hungary. But so far, such U.S. government-supported insurance is not available for American exports to East Germany. And judging by the almost total absence of U.S. companies at the Leipzig Trade Fair in March, American industry may be missing out on a golden opportunity to service a market of about 16 million people virtually starved for consumer goods. In Bonn, this is Don Jordan.
As the wall comes down, prices being asked for bits and pieces of the hated former concrete curtain keep going up. But there may be social justification in the profits. And as one might guess, where there's money involved, there are also Japanese investors. This is our special section.
Hey, Here at the Brandenburg Gate, there's a real carnival feeling. Stalls selling sausage and beer are doing brisk business, as are those selling discarded East German Army uniforms and chunks of the Berlin Wall. $6 with graffiti, $5 without. The chipping has become more fierce because the wall itself is being taken down by East German workmen and transported away to the Limex Import-Export Company, who are selling off each 4-foot wide and 12-foot high section to the highest bidder.
I'm not buying it for myself. I'm buying it for a client in West Berlin who wants to have it for his own personal reasons. I do know that he's going to put it up in his garden, and he's interested in politics and interested in Germany, and he's a West Berliner, and he is buying a piece.
Executives at Limex have been the target of criticism because of the moral question involved in profiting from such a sale. In turn, they've promised not to sell any panels if someone was shot against it. Wolfgang Kuhner is part of the sales team.
The sale itself will result in an improvement in the public health services, since all financial earnings we can get will be accounted directly for public health services.
The price of each panel depends on which section of the wall it comes from. The area around the Brandenburg Gate fetches the highest price. Generally, the starting price is around $400,000. A Japanese marketing firm knows that's only a fraction of what it should be selling for, and one of their top men is in Berlin to try and get in on the marketing and sale of the Berlin Wall in Japan.
I would say just sell some little pieces that you have some money to operate with, and then hit the Japanese market, go directly there. You know, they have their office there. It's a Limes office in Tokyo, so from my point of view, there's no reason at all to go through a giant like Mitsui, who makes all this money of this idea. So I would go there directly and sell all these 50 or 60 or whatever it is pieces directly on the Japanese market at a price, of course, as high as possible.
But there is one problem involved in buying a piece of the Berlin Wall. Delivery isn't included in the price. So the task of getting home the 2.7-ton panel is up to the new owner. In Berlin, I'm Catherine Field.
By now, most people around the world know that East Germans, and by an impressive democratic majority, want reunification. They said that loud and clear in the recent elections. Yet how do the youths of Leipzig, where the peaceful GDR revolution began last year, feel about being joined with the West? Many of them were too young to vote in the balloting, but not too young to have their opinions.
Hiya, friends, and how's the weather? Well, hopefully it's nice, but in Leipzig, East Germany, people are weathering the effects of their revolution. And in the disco of Leipzig University Student Center, those filled with ideals of youth voice concern on their possible sacrifice to ideals of West.
We could lose our identity into the West, the capitalist. And I think that the 40 years of the existence of GDR, they are not so bad.
But they were not so good either. And while that's why many of the students demonstrated for change, of course, the momentum may have taken their country, or of course.
We are going back to West Germany. We are just going to be the same kind of country as West Germany is now. And it's not the ideal kind of society.
I wouldn't say that's a step back. I mean, that's a step forward.
Well, it's tough to deny that East Germany's moving forward, and hardly anyone would choose to return to the past. But to lose one's country in the course of change is hardly an easy thing to accept, no matter how much better things are.
I'm really happy that things have changed. It wouldn't have gone any month longer the way it had. Oh, it was really horrible. But that we can't build up sort of different kind of society on our own is sad for me.
Reporting from Leipzig, I'm Steve Merchinsky.
In New York, I'm Lee Murphy.
And in Stony Brook, I'm Eric Corley. Ha! Oh, they hate it when I do that. Well, anyway, that was Germany Today. Actually, it was Germany about 2 weeks ago. And we're going to have another Germany Today because we get these tapes here at the radio station, and we usually get them once a month. But now we got this little notice in the mail saying that because of all the stuff happening in Germany, and I guess because there's going to be, they're making one Germany out of two, they're going to send us tapes once every 2 weeks now. So we have a bit of catching up to do, and as a result, we are skipping Radio Moscow for today. I know people were waiting up for Radio Moscow, but we'll do something like that next week, you know? What do you think, Bozo? Bozo, you there?
Oh, yes.
What's your
name? Hello there.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good,
how are you?
Classical show there.
Thank you very much.
Nice to
Thank
stretch
you.
The limits of
decency,
indecency, and obscenity, and all that kind of thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm sure the PMRC was right on your case.
Oh yes.
Okay. Well,
yes.
You heard it from the source.
Yes.
Yeah, we're skipping Radio Moscow today, but we are going to take your phone calls, 632-6901, if you have thoughts about German unification or American disintegration. Give a call now, and we'll put you right on. And don't forget, we've got the continuing saga of the tripods at 11, and we've got another Germany Today later on in the night. This is Brain Damage.
The number you have reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain Damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say? Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say? Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
You make the change. You need to change.
Hitler ist jünger als ich.
Keep doing, folks. We have to keep dreaming because only through dreams can reality be realized. Hey, what do you think of that one? 632-6901 is our telephone number, and no, we're not going to be calling Albania tonight. No, I'm sorry, we can't do it. There's just nobody to call at the moment. We'll get to it, but not tonight. But Albania did make it to the front page of the New York Times this week. I don't know if people noticed that. And it seems that that glasnost is coming to Albania in a sense. Headline read, Albania is easing curbs on worship and ban on travel. Moves to end isolation. It also liberalizes its justice system and cuts number of capital offenses. Yes, it's most incredible things that are happening.
It's also changing its name to Albany.
No, they're not. It's a vicious rumor.
I'm kidding.
People like you start unrest, you know that. Albania is defined as the last holdout in a Europe in full retreat from hardline communist rule, and they came further out of their shell this week, unveiling a package of human rights reforms. And those reforms include a cut in the number of capital crimes from 34 to 11. They retain treason and espionage as capital crimes. Women will be exempt from the death penalty. And women aren't exempt from the death penalty here, are they?
No,
I can't recall the last time a woman was executed. Oh, well, if you mean the Rosenbergs or something like that.
No, actually, more recently than that. I don't remember the exact year, but I'd say within the last few years.
Really?
Yes, I believe it was North Carolina. I think her name was Velma Barfield.
How is it that you know this?
I remember reading about the case because I'm very
mine like a steel trap here. You remember the names and everything. I mean, I remember Gary Gilmore, right?
Yes.
This is the first one that got executed back in 76, was it?
76, yes.
That I remember, but I don't remember the names of people that have been executed. I suppose that's one of my failings, but
no, it's not a failing at all. No, I just happen to remember because I'm
enough trouble remembering people that I know.
No, I'm very big follower of capital punishment services. I love killing people.
Oh.
Or not killing
I've
them myself.
I've
but I
that.
Love seeing people getting killed. No, I shouldn't kid about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that because whenever they do have one of these executions, there's always kind of a carnival atmosphere going on outside. And
there is.
Something that I'm sure they had in mind when they brought back the death penalty.
I agree. I actually
sort of like the public lynchings back in
right.
Victorian England.
Exactly. Well, the public hangings that would take place in England even before the Victorian era, where it was reported that many pickpockets did their best business, and very often pickpocketers would be hung for their crime. And the argument of capital punishment being a deterrent didn't wash when you consider that if somebody is hung for picking pockets and that at the actual public execution where this was taking place, people were going around picking pockets, it didn't seem to be much of a deterrent. I actually, all kidding aside, I'm very much opposed to capital punishment, as I've mentioned on this program before.
How do you feel about picking pockets?
I don't think that's a good idea either, but I don't think it's as serious as capital punishment. I think it's terrible when somebody gets killed, and when somebody murder somebody, I think they should, and they're convicted, I think they should be put in prison for life. But
yeah, but you see, just putting somebody in prison, I mean, that sounds, it's nice and easy to say, put them in prison, but what happens to them in prison? You just put them in prison and forget about them? You know, something's going to happen to them at some point. What's the point of putting them in prison? A lot of people say, prison doesn't do them any good, so why don't we just kill them, you know?
Right.
I could see the point there, but you know, if you're going to put them in prison, it should be for a reason, not just to get them out of sight, because they won't be out of mind. They'll be out of sight, and lots of times they come back at some point. And
well,
they're worse off than when they went in than who is being helped by the whole system.
You're absolutely right. I think, though, that in the case where someone has actually murders somebody, that they should go to prison for the rest of their life anyway, and they should never come out. But I don't think anybody should be killed as a punishment inflicted by the government because, for one thing, if a mistake is made, at least you can let somebody out of prison.
Mm-hmm. Although it takes a long time, even when they realize there's
been
a mistake.
That's right, which is bad enough as that is. Imagine what happens when somebody is killed and it turns out that they were innocent. Then you can't just scratch your head if you're the government and say, well, that's the cost of doing business. Although Mayor Koch, I remember a few years ago, ex-Mayor Koch, was asked about this point. And he felt that if occasionally an innocent person was sent to their death wrongfully, that it was worth it. So actually, I mean, there are people who actually have an answer for that along those lines.
I like Mayor Koch. I mean, I did, because he was always honest. But I hated the things he said. And I respected him because he was always honest. And I just, whenever he talked, though, I just couldn't believe the things that came out of his mouth. But, yeah, that's his view on the subject. What's your view on any subject? 632-6901. I know we've been having trouble with the phones because this is the last weekend that school is in session here at Stony Brook, and everybody's apparently using the phone to call and make long-distance calls so that the university gets stuck with the bill or something like that. I don't know what the story is, what people are doing over there, but whatever they're doing, you can keep trying to get through, and I'm sure eventually you will. Because if you hear a busy signal now, we're not busy. All the lines are dead. That's a busy signal coming into the university. 632-6901. Just keep trying, and you will get through. Here's something fairly scary, I think, that came out in the newspaper a couple of days ago. The recording industry has unveiled a uniform warning label to appear on records, tapes, and compact discs nationwide. Sort of an ongoing saga here at Brain Damage. We've been talking about this for quite a few months now. The ratings of records, the prevention of hearing what you want to hear, whether it's certain music or certain words or certain pictures or whatever. Anyway, this sticker to be assigned voluntarily by individual record companies and performers reads, Parental Advisory, Explicit Lyrics. The announcement comes in response to pressure for mandatory labeling of music containing explicit lyrics. Legislators in 19 states have recently proposed state bills mandating warning labels, often quite involved ones. In the past, individual record companies designed their own stickers, and according to the Record Industry Association of America, which introduced its sticker a few days ago, I guess, and represents the companies producing 90% of the music recordings sold in the United States, the new sticker does not mark a change in policy on what gets stickered, but only standardizes the policy already in effect. The recording industry label is considered less damaging to sales and to the reputation of the recording than some proposed government labels. A bill recently approved by the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, for example, called for a label reading, ready for this? This is what the label would have read. Warning, may contain explicit lyrics descriptive of or advocating one or more of the following. I'm sorry, this is hard. Suicide, sodomy, incest, bestiality, sadomasochism, adultery, sexual activity in a violent context, murder, morbid violence, use of illegal drugs or alcohol. Parental advisory. I guess you could sort of say the same thing about the Today Show, couldn't you? Parental advisory is everywhere you go. It could have been a lot worse, said Monica Lynch, president of the rap-oriented Tommy Boy Records, which is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers. And she was referring to the industry label, the one that just came out that just says Parental Advisory, Explicit Lyrics. Still, many in the music industry are concerned with the effects stickering in general has on sales and freedom of speech. Already, many retailers, including the 119 stores of the Kentucky-based disc jockey chain, have refused to stock any stickered product. That's right. According to Alan Jacoby, a lawyer for Skywalker Records, whose profane rap records have been banned from stores across the country despite warning labels, now, in many cases, music stickered as inappropriate for kids is unavailable to adults, too. Jacoby also said that labeling mostly hurts rap and heavy metal specialty labels, which run the risk of having their entire catalogs placed off limits. Record Industry Association spokeswoman Patricia Heimers argued that stickering does not constitute censorship because no record, tape, or CD will be stickered unless the artist and label agree that it should be. But according to Danny Goldberg, chairman of the American Civil Liberties Union Foundation of Southern California, the threat of censorship begins when an artist doesn't want a sticker and a label does. Heimer said the Record Association takes no position on this. It's up to the label and the act to settle. I just have the feeling that this will be used as a bargaining chip in many record contract deals. If you want in with us, you have to have your records stickered. Avoid any kind of lawsuit, any kind of controversy, any kind of fundamentalist breathing down our necks. I don't know where it's going to lead, folks. I really don't. This is could be the beginning of the end here. Where the only thing allowed is the middle of the road safe kind of thing. It's good though. It's good to see. I mentioned this last week. It's good to see new radio stations coming on. There's one in New York City. It's not actually a station. It's more of an outlet for a satellite service. But it's heavy metal on the AM dial. And it's just good to hear something that could be considered offensive. And, I'm not just saying that to be obnoxious, to offend people, but you've got to be offensive occasionally. It's the only way to keep dialogue flowing. I mean, take a look at Bozo Wiener here. He's a perfect example.
Why? Yes.
We put him on the air, and we know that it repels many people. But yes, the fact of the matter is they tune in. And they tune in because they want to be able to talk about it the next day as they're recovering in the emergency room.
Yes, and it helps the other programs that precede and follow mine.
That's sure not helping me.
That much
phones
more.
The phones are dead here. I don't know what the problem is. I mean,
shall
I don't know if we can
call you?
Blame this phone system anymore. I don't know. Maybe people really aren't calling. 632-6901. Let me try this myself. Okay, I'm going to actually access my long distance company here. I'm going to try calling into the campus from off campus and see if I actually get through. Because people were telling me before that they were having lots of difficulty. Entering my authorization code now, and I'm calling the radio station phone number. Let's see what happens. Okay, those two clicks mean that it's going to go through. Yeah, so it's going to start ringing any second now. Okay, and there I am. I see my call showing up. So I had no trouble getting through, folks. So that means you shouldn't have any trouble getting through. 632-6901. Tell us what you think of record labeling as well as Unified Germany and whatever else has been going on. This is something that I was actually just handed a few minutes ago, so I don't really know the details here, but let's try to explore this one together. 2 months ago, the Home Dish Satellite Corporation was a flourishing New York City company beaming hardcore sex films to 30,000 subscribers around the country and softcore ones to 1.2 million customers. Quite a few. But among the homes receiving the transmissions were about 50 in Montgomery County, Alabama, where the district attorney has vowed to stamp out pornography. And now, the company finds itself driven out of business. It is facing criminal charges in what lawyers say is the first case in which local obscenity laws are being applied to programs carried nationwide by satellite technology. New York's Governor Mario Cuomo has been asked to extradite Home Dish's four officers who have never set foot in Alabama to face charges that they violated Alabama's obscenity law. This is incredible. I suppose if I call a directory assistance operator in Alabama and utter a four-letter word, I'm accused of breaking Alabama's obscenity law, and I could be extradited to Alabama. No, I can't do it. I can't do that. I'm on the radio. But after the show, folks, after the show, I'm going to let loose with a string of... Well, never mind.
So you want to go to Alabama, huh?
I've never seen Alabama.
Well,
I hear it's lovely this time.
See it now.
I wonder if what I've just done is intent to carry out a violation of some
sort. I don't
think
so, no. Not going to get to worry about that.
All right.
So let me understand. I just want... they have been accused of violating the pornography laws in Alabama because they were beaming...
they had a satellite. This is incredible. I'm just learning about this.
From New York that was picked up by subscribers in Alabama.
They were in New York City. Let's see if they're still around. We're going to call directory assistance in New York. We're not going to use any obscenities on them. We're just going to ask them if there's a number for the Home Dish Satellite Corporation. A flourishing New York City.
The telephone is Sarah.
Yes. Hi, operator. We need the number for Home Dish Satellite Corporation. It's in New York City.
Thank you.
Flourishing company there.
Look on
the
yellow pages.
The number is area code 212-696-1221.
Okay.
Area code.
Oh, I heard you the first
time.
Give
me back my pen.
They're still listed. They're still listed. So we'll try calling them a little later and see if anybody is there anymore, if they have some kind of recording on or who knows what. Let's continue with this, though. In addition to Home Dish, some major companies involved in its satellite transmission were also indicted. As a result, they refused to do business with Home Dish, and the company has been forced into bankruptcy. States have been prosecuting people on obscenity charges since the early 19th century, and the Home Dish case raises again the issue of differing community standards in tolerating pornography. But it also involves the question of how the threat of legal action in one community can so frighten distributors that such materials may not be freely disseminated elsewhere in the country. Civil liberties officials have decried the prosecution as a threat to First Amendment rights and say the Montgomery County District Attorney, Jimmy Evans, brought the case against the company because he is running for State Attorney General, an office he sought unsuccessfully 4 years ago. Mr. Evans did not return repeated telephone calls, and aides said he was busy campaigning. But his senior assistant, Stephen Fiega, said the charges were brought because the films offended the standards of the local community. It makes you wonder, why were they tuning in? You know, they had to get a special decoder to watch this thing, didn't they? And he said, I think they would offend any community, including all the communities around us. He's spoken for us, folks. This guy in Alabama has turned off this program for us here in New York because they would offend any community in his definition. The Alabama law is modeled on a 1974 Supreme Court opinion in which obscenity was defined in part as works that offend local community standards. Last year, the Alabama legislature amended the law to include satellite transmissions. Mr. Fiega said the investigation was begun after a parent complained that children at a junior high school were selling copies of films broadcast by a Home Dish subsidiary, the American Ecstasy Channel, and that's spelled with three X's in the middle of it. American Ecstasy featured X-rated films that showed explicit sexual acts and had about 30,000 customers around the nation, of which 22 were in Montgomery County, Alabama. To receive American Ecstasy, satellite dish owners paid Home Dish $20 a month or $60 a year. It's not a bad deal, actually. Home Dish also operated the Tuxedo Channel, also spelled with three X's, which beamed R-rated films by satellite to cable companies that then made them available to about 1.2 million customers. About 30 Montgomery County residents paid $4.95 a month for the Tuxedo service. On February 14th, Mr. Evans announced indictments against Home Dish Satellite as well as some of the nation's largest telecommunications companies and their officers based on the films provided by American Ecstasy. The companies charged by the grand jury were the GTE Corporation, the GTE SpaceNet Corporation, and the United States Satellite Incorporated. GTE and GTE SpaceNet operate the satellite that carried American Ecstasy, and United States Satellite provided service of getting the programs to the satellite known as the uplink. Within days of the indictments, all of the companies involved in carrying satellite signals ended their contracts with Home Dish, citing the Alabama charges. Other satellite companies and Uplinker Concerns declined to carry Home Dish's Ecstasy channel. Hughes Communications also cut off Home Dish from sending its R-rated tuxedo service. We were out of business at that point, said Jeffrey J. Younger, the president of Home Dish, which he said had aspired to become the HBO of the adult film industry. Last week, Mr. Evans announced that a grand jury had indicted the Tuxedo Network as well. Norman Dorson, the president of the American Civil Liberties Union, who is one of the lawyers defending Home Dish, said it is shocking to think that Alabama could reach out and chill free speech in all 50 states. Mark Ellison, chief counsel for the Satellite Broadcasting Communications Association, a trade association, said that he was especially troubled by the indictment of the Tuxedo Network because it did not show X-rated movies but R-rated films with no explicit depiction of sexual acts. If there's any kind of trouble with Tuxedo, he said, there's potential trouble for all the major cable companies like HBO, Cinemax, and the Movie Channel. Those companies offer similar films, he said. Paul Sherman, a New York City lawyer representing Home Dish with Mr. Dorson, said that under New York State law, a person may not be extradited to another state unless the crime he is charged with is one that would be a violation of New York law. This stuff is surely not a crime in New York, he said. Evan Davis, Governor Cuomo's counsel, said through a spokesman that he had not yet studied the extradition request from Governor Guy Hunt of Alabama. Mr. Evans has not sought the extradition of the six other people indicted, including the chairman of GTE. Professor Thomas G. Krattenmaker at Georgetown University Law School said it is generally accepted in communications law that companies licensed by the FCC as common carriers are not responsible for the content of what they carry. The telephone companies, for example, are not liable for the so-called dial-a-porn services, but a bill is pending in Congress to change that. Oh, boy, that is so frightening. Under Supreme Court decisions, the issue of whether films or books violate local standards is ultimately a question for a jury. Mr. Dorson said that he believed Alabama's contemporary community standards are surely not the same as in many, if not most, other states. But Mr. Fiega disagreed. I think the average New Yorker viewing these films would also view them as obscene, he said. Mr. Fiega said that he understood that such films were freely available in New York, but he said that did not represent any difference in community standards, but rather an unwillingness of the New York authorities to enforce the law. Does anybody else see him, like, sort of twisting things around there? I do. Because if they're there and if people are buying them, then it seems like they're acceptable community standards, right? But he says they're not willing to enforce the law. But the law isn't what the community standards are. The law is opposing the community standards. He's got his own view of looking at things, and he wants everybody to agree with it. Seems like very many other people throughout the course of the 20th century and all the other centuries before that. Anyway, Montgomery County includes the capital city of Montgomery, one of the fastest growing cities in the South, and two Air Force bases. Since Mr. Evans began his campaign against pornography, there have been no X-rated films offered at the 30 to 40 video stores in the city, although many offer the R-rated movies. Mr. Evans lost a court battle in 1984 to stop distribution of what he said were obscene magazines, and convenience stores continue to sell Playboy and Penthouse magazines. Mr. Fiega said the district attorney's office has been successful in shutting down drive-in movies and businesses that offered private viewing booths for pornographic films. Well, folks, I'm no great fan of pornography. I don't want to seem like I am. But, damn, this is really scary, because if they... We've seen they've successfully shut down a national X-rated film distributor. One state, one backward primitive state, I'm sorry, but I had to say that, has done this. Has turned them off for all 49 other states. Or, I shouldn't say a backward primitive state, I should say certain backward primitive people in that state have managed to turn this off. But not only X-rated films, they've turned off the R-rated films as well. And they're not going to stop there. If they're successful here, they're going to keep going. And it's going to be books, it's going to be magazines, it's going to be any kind of speech you can imagine. And if that's not the most frightening thing you've heard this this week, I'd like to hear what is. Give us a call, 632-6901. I'd like to know how people feel about that. That and the record labeling. I mean, Albania is opening up. We're shutting down. We're closing up. Why? You know, what is suddenly the big obsession with protecting people from lyrics, protecting people from pictures? You know, it seems like everywhere, from Cincinnati to Alabama to New York City, people have this obsession with closing the doors, not letting you make up your own minds. And you have to wonder, where is it going to lead? 632-6901. Good evening.
Evening.
How you doing?
All right.
You got an opinion on this?
Yes, I think now that it's passé, no longer socially acceptable to hang black people in Alabama, they want to hang something else.
Interesting. Well, you think it's something endemic in Alabama?
Something in the water.
Something in the water. I'm beginning to wonder. Well, you know, we know they're a lot more conservative down there about certain things, but again, the definition of obscenity is community standards, right? And it's supposed to stick to the community. And I see this as they've shut down a national... You still there?
Requiem.
Okay, go ahead.
And, you know, at the time I said it was good fun, just like everybody thought it was. 1948 was good fun. Oh, well, better roll.
Is that your dog?
Ciao.
Okay. I guess he had an intruder alert of some sort there. Give us a call. 632-6901. Show us that free speech means something to you, because... the day may come when they outlaw us. It's not too far away, you know. It's not inconceivable. I mean, this I thought was inconceivable. Record labels banning books, banning art exhibits, banning satellite channels, and prosecuting the companies that distribute the material. Can you imagine what's going to be happening if the phone company is charged with a crime every time an obscene phone call is made? You know, they'll have to police the lines. They'll have to monitor everything that's being said. Kind of similar to the situation that exists right now with computer bulletin boards. I don't know if you've been following the Operation Sun Devil of the past week. It's part of a huge, huge crackdown on allegedly illegal activity. But what happens in these cases, they hold system operators of computer bulletin boards, people who own the computers, responsible for every single message that's on the system. So if I run a big computer system somewhere and one person writes something on that computer, which is illegal, I can get prosecuted for that. It's the most incredible thing. And they want to make it so the phone companies get prosecuted when somebody does something illegal or obscene on the phone lines. I'd like to know more about that law. I've just been finding out bits about it. So give us a call, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi-ho.
Are you there?
Kermit the Frog.
There's a computer.
Ribbit.
Kermit the Frog. Do you have anything intelligent to say?
I want to be a guest one day. I am a big fan of yours.
You a great fan of mine? Well,
did not know where I am at or be.
What would you talk about if you were a guest?
Miss Peggy is calling. Bye bye.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. Computers, they're so impersonal. Well, I found a good computer this week. Actually, somebody told me about it, but oh great, phone system is all tied. I'm sorry, folks. I know there's probably people trying to get through now. I can't get out, so. What can you do? You know, we're moving backwards. We're moving backwards in time. People can't call in. We can't call out. Ah, it's a call-in show, so it makes things awfully difficult. 632-6901. At least we've got the tripods coming up at 11 o'clock if the other tape recorder doesn't fall apart. We've already had one fall apart tonight. It seems like everything's crashing down around us. What do you think, Jim, before you leave. You're skulking out of here.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are. You got your coat on.
No,
and you're sneaking through the door.
No, I wasn't. No, not at all. Not at all.
Deserting a sinking ship, eh?
No, I'll stick around for a while longer.
Well, get people to call. Get people to bypass this phone system and make calls into the campus.
I don't know if I can get them to bypass the phone system, but
100 people called at once. I bet somebody would get through.
Well, I was going to briefly review just what you've just discussed here, because it seems to me that it has rather, as you feel, far-reaching implications. Now, this company distributed programming via satellite around the country. They're based in New York. And in Alabama, a legal official there brought charges against people in the company for what was being transmitted on satellite under a law in Alabama, I guess an anti-pornography law in Alabama. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Okay, and when you say that the company was shut down, I just want to double check what happened.
People from Alabama didn't come up and raid the place, but
right.
What did happen was they issued indictments, and they not only issued indictments against the company in New York City, but against all the people that were doing business with the company in New York City, which made them say, okay, we're not going to do anything more with you because you guys spell trouble. And because they lost all their contracts, they obviously couldn't do any more business.
Okay, so what we're talking...
So even if they drop the thing tomorrow, they've still shut down something.
The business. And I think that this is a very important point. I'm not going to sit here, I guess, as you mentioned before, you're not a big fan of pornography. I'm not going to sit here and defend specific pornography or get into a discussion of what makes pornography or not make pornography. But what I am going to say is that I'm very concerned with the implications of legal action, be it civil or criminal action, mm-hmm. legal action, taken as a means to stop things from being said or written or printed or read or exhibited or viewed or transmitted or listened to, because the individual making the decision with the individual with the power to take a legal action decides that this that such material is offensive. I will certainly grant, especially to people who have children who are concerned about the influences of the outside world on children, that this is a very, very thorny type of problem, that people have a legitimate concern about how individuals, particularly children, particularly at an impressionable age, how they respond to certain kinds of material, be it pornographic, be it relating to suicide, any number of things. And I'm not making light of that, and I'm not saying that there doesn't have to be some way of looking at this problem. But what I personally feel is that censorship, that in the way of arresting people, putting people in prison, shutting down companies, because somebody doesn't like what is being said, is a very not only heavy-handed, severe action to take, but has constitutional implications that, in I think, a very quick matter of time, if it's allowed to continue, will put people under a very repressive way of life, faster than I think many people realize.
Faster than you can imagine. Because
right.
The thing is, what happens is the most offensive trait or aspect of society is what's seized upon first, and then after that it becomes easy, because
right.
you take something like, you take drug dealers and you say, okay, well, because of drug dealers we have to impose urine tests on everybody, and then before you know it, suddenly everybody's got to do this because of a few bad people. We've got to have lie detector tests, and before you know it, lie detector tests are everywhere. Now because of a few bad people, we have to impose censorship. And before you know it, censorship will be everywhere, too. So that's why, even if you don't agree with something, you've got to defend its right to exist.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as long as somebody... I have more problems with pornography because of the victimization of the people that take part in it. I don't have any problem with it being distributed. If people want to watch something like that, that's their affair. But I'm more concerned about the people that might get lured into a world of prostitution or whatever. And that's something where people should be helped out and you know, the alternatives made known to them. But the problem isn't with looking at it. You know, looking at it as an individual decision, unless people are being forced to look at it. And I don't think that's a problem. I have never been, approached by somebody and forced to watch pornography or threatened that if I didn't watch pornography, they were going to do physical harm or something like that. I don't think that's much of a problem. You know, it might be in some places, but it's not around here.
No, it's. I don't think that people are generally forced into it. But one point that you raise, which is a good one, is avoidance of victimization of people. I think that that is a very important issue. And I personally think that if there is more and more repression of these forms of so-called pornographic expression, I think that will lead to actually to more victimization, because then it will go completely underground, and mm-hmm. who knows what will take place to the people participating in it. It won't be monitored as openly as it could be monitored. I think that if someone gets involved in pornography and they are victimized, I think it's easier for them to be able to have their rights protected as a person if the pornography itself is not held to be illegal, because if it's held to be illegal, there'll be even more concealing of what is going on. But speaking about being forced into something,
mm-hmm.
What struck me as very ironic is that occasionally I'll notice in New York City a table set up in different places, the subway or on the street, with a gigantic picture of a cover of a so-called men's magazine, and a petition being circulated to make illegal this type of material, for people to sign a petition to have the federal government make it illegal. And this is put forth as a very big women's issue by the people who have this table set up. I once saw another picture that was not a cover of the magazine, but mm-hmm. was, I'm not going to get into a description, just suffice it to say that there was some nudity involved and something going on with that portion of the nudity that was being displayed in public as a means of of disturbing people enough that they felt it was bad enough that they should sign the petition. It was a way of getting the point across. And again, this is before there's a large issue relating to women. Now, I don't disagree, certainly, mm-hmm. with the right of the people to put forth this position, and I don't disagree with the whole idea that there is a large women's issue involved in all this. But my personal feeling is that, ironically, having that large poster size photo of nudity of the upper body, of a woman's uh-huh. body, displayed that way and placed in a, again, I don't want to get into explicit description, but it's placed in a context that would be considered very provocative, I guess, to a lot of people. That the irony was that many women and children who normally wouldn't open, or even men who normally wouldn't open to such a picture, were then being exposed to it.
Being forced to look at it.
Now,
it's kind of a shock factor, I guess.
It is a shock factor. And there was, as far, if I'm not mistaken, there was a case brought against the people that had set up this table, and they were told that they couldn't do this anymore. And I actually disagree with that. I disagree with the idea that they should have been prevented by law from doing what they did, which was to try to get people to support a law that would censor, and using that picture as a way of shocking people. Even though I disagree with the idea of the censorship and of using the picture to shock people, I also further disagree with the fact that they were given penalties for what they did. I just think they should have exercised better judgment not to display the picture, and I personally don't think that they should be trying to get laws passed against pornography. I was just one other point I was going to make in relation to this as to what I think should be done to combat the apparent victimization, or victimization in certain cases, of women and pornography. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, if there was a law if the law they were trying to get passed got passed, they wouldn't be able to do what they did.
Exactly.
Which I think is kind of funny.
Exactly.
Because,
that's the irony of it. And I'm not making light, I know you're not making light, of the legitimate concerns of women about violence that are perpetrated,
right. Well, that's,
against
gotta,
them, and of victimization.
Gotta,
I'm
you've
not,
got to attack the actual problem, not a symptom of the problem.
Exactly.
And that's all that pornography is a symptom of more of a problem of man's treatment against women. You know, that's something else.
Exactly.
And you've got to strike that where, you know, where the actual problem is.
Exactly. I was just going to say, there's one point on that very quickly. I personally feel that rather than shut down entities, I think it would be one possibility, not a panacea, but one possibility is to have an encouragement of women to get involved not only in where they are involved mostly nowadays, but in the distribution and the creation of different forms of expression that, let's say, instead of calling it pornography, could be called, in general, erotica, and allow women to have their point of view that might help to encourage a more healthy outlook on the...
But we don't have to allow anything. It already exists.
I just mean greater encouragement rather than trying to discourage any form of expression of erotica altogether.
You're not going
to
solve any problem by banning, you know, banning the expression. You've got to make people not want to... you know, people have to be educated. And if you think that something is wrong, you've got to convince them that it's wrong. You can't just take it away from them. I mean, you know, if somebody's doing something that you don't like, do you really think you're going to convince them by just snatching whatever it is that they have that you don't want them to have? They're not going to say, oh, well, I guess I respect that. They're going to get pretty upset by it. Here I am defending pornography, which I don't usually do, and I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't being threatened with extinction by these fundamentalist creeps. Now, I'd like to end on that note for the moment, because we do have to go into the tripods, but I want to come right back to this discussion and take the phone calls that we're starting to get and give out the number, 632-6901. I'd like to play my little version of religious fundamentalism from King Missile, and then we'll be hearing the latest chapter of the ongoing saga of intrigue and drama and passion that takes place on Long Island, and I don't know, I've lost track of how many episodes we're up to now. I think it's number 4, number 5, or something like that. And after that, we'll be right back here with this discussion. We'll be taking your phone calls, 632-6901. First, here's King Missile. They may be banning pornography right now in Alabama, but what do you think they think of this song? Something to ponder. Maybe you won't be able to hear this in a couple of years. Stay tuned for the tripods, and we'll be right back with our discussion. 632-6901. This is Brain Damage on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents The Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle for security and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. In our last episode, Uncle Jonathan surprised the Tripods by offering Howard a role in an upcoming motion picture. Now it's a few minutes later. Pop's gone out for a walk, Uncle Jonathan is on the telephone, and Howard and Kathy are discussing the situation. And we hear...
I don't know, Kathy. I've never had to face this sort of a decision before.
You could be a star, Howard, with your good looks and charisma. You could be the next Clark Gable.
Yeah, I guess anything's possible. The only question I'm asking myself is whether or not I want to give up everything we have here on Long Island.
Oh, don't worry about that. There's not that much to give up in the first place.
Well, I just think it's kind of irresponsible.
You get that money from him one way or the other.
I don't like the way that sounds.
You understand that? Hmm. Yeah, I don't want to hear this.
That's my uncle.
Well, don't call me up and tell me something like that. You take care of it.
I just think it's kind of irresponsible to just pack up and fly off to some remote part of the world. I've never been like that. I like to do things in a rational fashion, that's all.
I know, dear, but I think the most rational thing for you to do would be to go wherever Uncle Jonathan sends you and make that movie. It'll open up a whole new future for all of us.
But what about you and Pop? I can't just leave you here.
Well, we'll be all right. Don't worry for a moment about us.
Well, I still have doubts.
Well, was that a business call, Uncle Jonathan?
Yes, it was. I'm sorry I took so long. So, Howard, have you decided to take me up on my film offer?
Well, we were just talking about that.
Yes, we were, and I was just telling Kathy that another disturbance in our lives might not be a good idea right now. After all, we're still adjusting to this new neighborhood.
What Howard's saying, Uncle Dear, is that he's afraid working on a film would take him away from the family while he's off somewhere in a remote part of the world.
I see. Well, is this homemade lemonade, Kathy?
Oh, yes, it is. In fact, I made it yesterday, Uncle.
Oh, let me try some of that.
Watch out.
Watch out, Uncle. Oh, I'm so sorry, Kathy. I thought there was a table there.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I'll take care of it. Let's just clean up this mess.
What we were saying was that it might do us more harm than good to start on something new right now. I mean, Kathy's already had such a hard time adjusting after moving from Big Bear City.
Well, I'm over that now, Howard.
Yes, and besides, you won't have to travel very far to work on it. The filming location is going to be on Whitney Island.
Where?
Whitney Island. You've heard of it, haven't you?
Isn't that just to the east of Long Island?
No, Kathy, you're thinking of Gardner's Island, or maybe you're thinking of Plum Island.
What's the one that the ferry goes to? Is that Block Island, or...
No, that's Fire Island, isn't it?
Well, no, I know that's not it. I was thinking of one of those little smaller ones out that way.
I could just tell you where it is. I would simplify things,
I
think.
No, thanks, Uncle.
That's okay.
But we have to learn our geography. We have to learn about Long Island somehow.
That's right.
Sooner or later.
We live here. We've got to learn about it.
Might as well be now that we learn it. I
think it was Shelter Island you were thinking of, Kathy.
No. I know where that is. It's just east of Greenport or something like that. But there's another one. It's kind of to the northeast of this.
Let me think.
It's very small, too. I don't think too many people live there.
Oh, maybe you mean Fisher's Island.
Ah, yes, that's it. I thought I'd never remember it.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Oh, but we still don't know where Whitney Island is.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, we give up, Uncle Jonathan. Where is this place?
What do you mean, we give up? It's not like the Tripods to give up.
Well, we have to give up. We don't know where it is. I've never heard of it before. Have you?
No, I guess I haven't. Uncle, where is it? Where'd he go?
I don't know.
Uncle Jonathan?
He was standing here a minute ago. Uncle Jonathan?
Uncle Jonathan. Oh, no!
What in the world was that?
It sounded like our entire China collection. Oh, it was priceless.
Oh.
Uncle Jonathan, Uncle Jonathan, are you all right?
Yes. I'm sorry, Kathy. I just reached up to get one plate, and they all came down.
Oh, that's all right, Uncle.
Yes, we'll clean it up later.
Sure, won't be any problem.
Well, let's forget about this, though. We've been racking our brains trying to figure out where Whitney Island is.
Yes, and we haven't even been able to come up with anything, so... I guess we give up.
Well, I should have told you from the beginning. Whitney Island was first chartered about 100 years ago by a Hungarian poet named Richardson. Since then, though, few people have found out about it because it's so small and obscure.
Yeah, but where is it, Uncle? If it's so obscure, why don't you...
That depends. Some people say it's 75 miles east of Long Island. Others claim it's 125 miles to the south. But either way, it's perfect for the film I'm making.
Sounds good. What kind of film is it?
It's about two people who are stranded on a small island for 20 years.
20 years?
Yes, and the effect that has on their lives.
20 years? That's a long time.
Yeah, I hope you don't have to film it for that long.
you have a good sense of humor, Howard.
He sure does, doesn't he? I'll tell you, the whole family is simply in stitches sometimes.
I'll bet. So what is your final word on this, Howard? Do you want to be in the picture or not?
I don't think Howard's going to change his mind, Uncle Jonathan. Mm. He can be very stubborn sometimes.
I'm afraid she's right on that point. She knows me like a book.
Oh, just out of curiosity, Uncle, who did you pick to be the other person stranded on the island?
Do you know that French actress and fashion model? Oh, what's her name? Brigitte Leroux. Yes, that's it.
Brigitte Leroux?
Yes.
You really managed to get her?
Hey.
That's amazing.
I don't suppose you'll change your mind, Howard.
Forget it, Uncle Jonathan. When Howard makes up his mind on something, he never...
Wait a minute, Kathy. I think I've changed my mind.
And so, after not wanting to work on Uncle Jonathan's film at first, Howard appears to have had second thoughts. And you'll want to be with us next time when we'll hear Kathy say...
But why did he change his mind so suddenly?
That's next week on The Tripod Family, a presentation of the Three Village Tobacco Farms and Radio Free Long Island. This is Don Topeka.
We'll be going right back to the phone, 632-6901.
See if I care.
No, I'll be there too.
Well, just see that you are. Oh, the mic's on. Shh.
It is?
Yeah, yes,
why?
We're back. What an exciting episode of the Tripods that was. Wasn't it exciting?
Yes, it was.
Well,
matter of fact,
Whitney Island. I almost went to Whitney Island 2 summers ago.
Did you really?
Almost.
Almost.
Wow.
But I got out of it at the last
minute. Wow. Well, you know, I remember the tripods when it was the bipods. That's how far back that story goes.
You go further back than most people would want to go, that's for
sure.
Pornography. Come on, let's get back to pornography here. That's what we're talking about. You know, the censorship, the people down south that want to keep things from happening up here. You know, it's not just pornography, but it could be rap music, it could be heavy metal, it could be anything.
Absolutely.
You know, anything that's looked upon as objectionable. It could be long hair, you know. Gay rights.
Women's rights. Yeah,
animal rights.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the. Aha, I had some of you out there, didn't I?
Yeah,
I had some of you out there going, whoa!
Well, you just made me age about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Let's go to the phone. Hopefully he'll be more civilized. Good evening.
Hi, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Now, if they plan to delegalize this, what are they doing? Like prohibition, it didn't do very much, did it?
Well, it didn't do very much, but how long was prohibition in effect for? A while, wasn't it?
I think so.
Before it got repealed.
14 years.
I'm not sure. I think it was
14 years?
Yeah.
Something sounds right to me. I think it was 1919 to 1933, I think.
It didn't work, but they can still do it, and it'll take a while to fail, you know, but I think eventually it'll have to fail.
And you know what's so funny?
I'm not sure. Can you hear him, caller?
Okay, let me...
Okay, can you hear Jim?
Yes, I can.
All right,
okay,
can you hear me? Yeah, you know, it's funny, when you think about prohibition, I guess the longest period of time in which it existed as a law was the 1920s, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the things that people in popular culture always think about or talk about, it seems, when the 1920s come along, are wild jazz parties with the gin flowing freely and everything, and hip flasks and speakeasies and all kinds of tremendous ramifications of the liquor being illegal.
Tune in on Sundays if you want that kind of stuff, because we do have a jazz show here. But continue with your thought. I just wanted to bring that up. We've got all the decadence here at USB.
That's right. It's just interesting that that experiment in social control not only ended by being lifted as a means of social control, but brought on a period of time where I think liquor was one of the biggest things people had on their minds. Even I think people who wouldn't have thought that much about it before thought a lot about it. Now, I'm not going to suggest that it's a good idea to now start legalizing all illegal drugs, for example, because there is a lot of drugs that when used, like, just precipitate involuntary violent behavior in people. But this is more to say that when certain things are prohibited, I think those things, two bad things happen. It becomes constitutionally a very shaky thing. And secondly, it can end up having more control over people than it does now.
Well, you know, there's certain things that have to be illegal, like murder, for instance. That's got to be illegal for obvious reasons I won't even get into. But other things like, why does marijuana have to be illegal? Why do other soft drugs have to be illegal when you have cigarettes that are legal? You know, and you've got these tobacco companies that are selling you a drug which is more, you know, more potent and... It'll hook you a lot stronger than these other things, and they don't think for a second of banning that.
Yeah, well, they think the psychologists say that if you legalize such things as marijuana, that the public is going to take it as a broader aspect, and there are going to be more people involved in it and younger. And what to say if they publicize pornography more than it already is, which is going to bring it out more into the open to the younger people. And everything. What's to say that they're not going to be attracted to it?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, if they are, then that's the question you have to ask, is why, you know, why is your life so empty that you need this kind of thing? And maybe you should fill up your life a little bit more.
Mm.
You know, I think that's what you have to attack, not the objects themselves, because then you just sort of draw the attention away from the real problem and you wind up doing more harm than good.
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening.
Yeah, I'd like to say I think all drugs should be made legal.
All drugs?
Yeah.
Including crack?
Yep.
But what about the situations where people, let's say, use crack or other drugs of that particular type, and then, even if they don't particularly choose to, become violent?
Well, I think that it's, if there's going to be any type of drug out there, so you might as well make them all legal, because after, if you made any drug legal, then they're just going to make another drug, so it's just going to keep on going into a ball.
Well, I'm just, what I'm saying is I understand your point, and there is merit in what you're saying, that if I understand you correctly, that by legalizing all the drugs, they won't have the kind of cloak of not only mystery, but it will not be such a it will not make it as difficult to obtain, so the price will go down, so the stakes will be lower, so the criminal activity associated with the procurement of the drug will start to decrease. Is that, I hear a lot of people put it in that way, and I think that has merit. But what I'm saying is that to knowingly put certain substances, to make them legal, to make them more accessible, easily accessible to people, I'm just concerned that these substances, such specifically as crack, will precipitate violent behavior in the person, so it's almost like...
Yes, but if those drugs are still kept illegal, then everybody, you know, people are going to be dying over, you know, like, there's many people dying today in the city over, you know, drug sales and stuff. A lot of the drug dealing that's going out there now. So if everything is legal, there won't be any of that. There'll be a lot less crime rate, I think.
That I agree with you about. What I wonder, though, this question I'm posing...
Do you agree that
yes.
You're a dick?
Okay. Well, maybe that's the last call we'll take unless we get...
Something like an open-minded...
I want to get some more calls here. Let's light up these phones. 632-6901, area code 516. Or maybe we'll just play religious fundamentalism, which is... what seems to be what's in demand these days.
I guess so.
632-6901. Let us know if you've got any thoughts on everything.
You know, what's interesting?
What were you going
to
say?
When you mentioned cigarettes, saying that certain drugs, such as marijuana, which don't necessarily precipitate violent behavior, that as long as they're used with moderation and prudently, may not have any kind of negative effect on people, are illegal, yet cigarettes, as you said, are legal, which can have been shown to have a deleterious effect on people, most definitely in a very far-reaching way, and can represent to many an addiction in and of itself.
Well, cigarettes are far worse than almost any drug I can think of.
They can very well.
I mean,
yes.
How many people do you know that die of marijuana, you know? But how many people do you know that die of cigarettes? You know, it's so incredible. People who smoke cigarettes.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure that inhaling smoke from marijuana is going to do it to you as well. But I'm saying, in proportion, the vast majority of people that are dying are dying because they smoke something that's legal.
That's right. Now,
you don't hear that address. You don't hear that address. I mean, these companies, they make so much money doing this. So much money selling death, which is really what it is.
Well,
and people get caught up in it. Young people get caught up in it, you know?
Yeah.
Intelligent people.
Yes, and it's what's interesting is that, to me, is that there's a debate going on, should cigarette advertising be allowed at all? And, of course, in broadcasting, in this country anyway, in radio and television, there is no cigarette advertising. But I don't know, Eric, if you're aware, do you know that that is not a law? Did you know...
What's not a law?
It is not a law. There is no law prohibiting the advertising of cigarettes on radio or television. I'm not throwing one of my weird jokes at you now. It is not a law. Did you know that...
It's voluntary?
It is voluntary that the broadcasters decided that rather than have it imposed as a law, that they would voluntarily undertake not to advertise cigarettes.
How could all broadcasters agree on something like that?
Well, I think it was probably, now I'm guessing, but I think it was probably adopted by the National Association of Broadcasters, of which I think just about every broadcaster is a member. And I don't, unless it subsequently became a law, originally when cigarettes stopped being advertised, it was actually not because of a specific law. But I'll tell you what I was going to say in regard to this is whether or not it's voluntarily undertaken or imposed, more so, though, the point arises where it's imposed by the government.
Mm-hmm.
The point I've heard raised, which I thought was very good, was should it, from a First Amendment standpoint, be prohibited to advertise cigarettes when it is still a legal activity to do so? In other words, the person that was making this point was not necessarily extolling the virtues of cigarette smoking, but was saying, isn't it hypocritical to have cigarettes legal and not to allow people to advertise the existence of the cigarettes. And I think that also gets into an issue, which I think shows how complex the whole notion of censorship is. What I was going to say regarding the use of crack, before that caller kind of took leave, I would certainly grant that a lot of drug-related crimes would decrease if crack became legal, but I wonder if that would be, if the decrease would be countermanded, as it were, or offset by an increase in crime relating to more people just using crack and becoming violent. And well, I think that also is something that has been taken. But to get back on the track specifically of censorship.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to that because that's more, in line with what we're doing here at the radio station. In fact, most of the records that we play probably would have a sticker like that on it, a sticker that says, sensitive lyrics. And you may say, okay, it's only a sticker. It's not going to affect things very much. But it will, because certain record stores will not want to carry a record if it's got a sticker. It'll become a deciding factor. They'll say, well, we can only fit this number of records into our store. Is it going to be this record or is it going to be this record? Well, this one has a sticker, this one doesn't, so let's get the one that doesn't because that will offend less people and we'll probably sell it easier. So a sticker can be used as a very easy way to weed out some of the things that that certain segments of the society want to weed out. And that includes just about every heavy metal record, just about every rap record, just about every record that's of any interest, I think. So if you have thoughts about that, let's hear them. 632-6901.
I think you're right about that. I think that one of the biggest things in the whole issue of censorship to me is context. I mm-hmm. think that to make blanket prohibition in just about any case I can think of, making a blanket prohibition of things that are said or written or casting some aura through the use of things like stickers is can be very deleterious to free expression. Now, I can understand, again, the advantage of some type of sticker system if this were an ideal world where people manufacturing the records put the stickers on records where there was language that is universally thought to be of somewhat of a shocking nature. There would be a handy guide for, let's say, parents to make some judgment as to whether or not they think their child is old enough yet to listen to that material, or for an adult to decide whether or not they want to buy the album if they are offended by explicit language. But I don't think this is an ideal world, and I think that this is a world where, as you just said, there would be economic ramifications which could end up having First Amendment ramifications, free speech ramifications. When stickers show up on records, it might not just cause certain people to decide not to buy it for their own personal reasons, which is okay. It might make distributors and record stores decide not to carry this product at all and could then end up having a chilling effect on a lot of forms of expression. If, let's say, a musical group wants, in a way to get across a certain point, to include certain explicit language, and they find that they can't get their records distributed anymore, they have chilled one of their important means of expression. If they feel that using some shocking language is a good way to get attention, just to give an example, if they want to make some point about some social issue or philosophical or political issue, and they feel that having some shocking language in the context of what they're doing relevant to getting people's attention, saying, hey, this is important, listen up, here's our message, we got your attention, now here's our message, and they're chilled from doing that, they can't get their product distributed. That's an example of how, as not only will that go by the wayside, but a lot of other forms of expression could start to go by the wayside. I mean, you can get into a situation where, for example, on the stage for many years, there was language that people could hear, let's say, on the Broadway stage, even going back into the 30s and 40s, that was unthinkable to be heard in motion pictures. What would be considered...
I think a better example is today in motion pictures is unthinkable on TV.
Exactly.
Slowly starting to make it onto TV. Why is TV a different world than the real world?
Because it's considered a situation where
Finish your sentence.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to go to the phone.
I'm sorry.
Don't understand hand signals. Finish your sentence. Go ahead.
Pointing to the phone. I think it's because the philosophy is that television goes into people's homes and they don't know what's going to be. They will be less subject to, let's say, scrutinize what they're about to watch as opposed to going out to a movie. What I was going to say was the stage...
You have two commas left in the sentence. Go ahead.
The stage can contain a lot of shocking language, but if stickers become the norm on records, who knows, the day could come where you'll see stickers plastered across theater marquees. Mm-hmm. And then people, producers, will decide... Well, this looks bad. I'm not going to get any kind of
audience. I think it's going to reach a stage where certain people get stickers, and I'm going to be the first one to get a sticker.
That could happen.
I mean, warning, maybe offensive to some.
That's right.
Good evening.
Yeah, I am. I just like to say I'm really fed up with all the censorship stuff on albums and things like that. I really think that stuff's kind of unnecessary. I mean, whatever happened to the parents?
Yeah, that's a good question. Have the parents failed so miserably that all of a sudden we need all these all these warnings?
Exactly. I mean, are stickers starting to replace, you know, parents' guidelines?
Well, I don't know. Some stickers may be preferable to some parents, but for the most part, I think a parent is your best guide into this world.
Exactly. And when a little sticker is just teaching a kid to do something else. I mean, when somebody sees a sticker like that on some album, it's a very, like, mystifying thing to it, you know, and he wants to see, you know, why is that sticker on that album? And then he'll wind up buying it anyway.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it'll have the opposite effect on a lot of people.
It gives a sort of appeal to it.
Yes.
Which I think is just as harmful because you're buying it for the wrong reasons. You're not buying it because it's something you like. You're buying it because it's got a sticker.
Exactly.
Or you're not buying it because it's got a sticker. It's just people have this need to categorize things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's the example of the old joke. Well, I don't want to even say it because somebody will probably play it on somebody. But what I'm saying is I think the caller raises a very good point. That thing that
What's
is
the joke? Say the joke.
It's better that I...
Jim, say the joke or leave.
Yeah, say the joke. Come on.
Come on. Say the joke. Come on. Come on. He's going to say it. Come on, Jim.
No, you see, if I suggest that somebody's going to do it and it's not going to be...
So someone will do it. Big deal. They're going to do it anyway.
Nah. I think it's better that I not. I mean, this is...
Come on, you already teased us with
it. I can still get the point. If the caller wants to, when they get off the air, I'll get on the phone and I'll tell them what it is. But if I disseminate it's just not. I might be encouraging a prank that could just be nasty to somebody, and I don't want to do that. But I can still summarize.
Could someone get grievously injured?
Well, it could be quite an irritant. But let me just summarize.
A trip to the hospital.
Might involve a trip to a mental hospital, frankly.
All right, well, then no physical harm is done.
Well, but your mental harm, let me tell you something, mental harm can be worse than physical harm sometimes, but I can summarize the point of what I'm going to say, actually.
Well, first of all, let me just say that if people want Jim to tell this practical joke, call now and say that.
No,
and
I can
guarantee Jim does respect large numbers. And when he gets large numbers of people saying, tell this practical joke, he will do it.
Well, we'll see what happens, but...
Phones are lighting up, Jim.
Suffice to say, if somebody takes a piece of paper and puts it on a door in which leading into a room where there's nothing and says, absolutely, positively, do not enter this room, there are going to be more people in the world fascinated by that door and by that room than by any kind of room where there's just a door that says, enter
the room. That's an excellent point right there. Because it's something that is hidden makes it more wanted to be seen than
exactly.
Something that you see every day.
Exactly. And I think that the caller raises a very good point that using stickers as an automatic means of, or presumably, a filter...
The door, give you back the cassette.
Now, Jim, that little anecdote you said about putting a sign up on a door, that wasn't your practical joke,
no,
was
but,
it?
No, but it raised the point of what I was going to say. And the thing
I,
is,
I imagine your practical
what I'm
going to
say is that
more people
would enter that door
mm-hmm.
than would have if it said, enter here.
Uh-huh.
If it says, don't enter. What that caller was raising was, and what you mentioned also about parents, very good point. You see, I wonder whether this whole idea of stickers did emanate from a groundswell of requests from parents, and even if it did,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's because parents, not that they're falling down on the job, not that I'm trying to criticize them, but that they've been made to feel that they are powerless.
Yeah, that they can't do enough.
Effectively, right, exactly. Whereas I think that instead of concentrating on putting stickers on records, there was more attention paid to the social resources and agencies available
to help parents if they want guidance as to how to relate to their kids as their kids grow up, and how to inculcate in them values that they feel will help the kids lead fulfilling lives. That is the way to go about it, and that there, and context, I think, again, is the word I used before, is very key here. If kids have adequately explained to them how certain words may be shocking, but that the context is important, that if mm-hmm. a word is used to get someone's attention, that can be a very effective use of the word, but if the word is used as an excuse to dehumanize others or to attack others or to use it as an excuse to violate the dignity of others, that's a bad use of the word, that is a way to help the kid discern what words mean and how to go about absorbing them into his experience. But I don't think that it's right to turn around and say, well, when this word is used, regardless, this person has to be arrested, and this person has to be fired, and this person has to have this, that, or the other thing done to them.
Right.
Much too arbitrary.
I'd like to know if there's any parents out there that have feelings on this, because you can certainly offer some insight that we might not have here. 632-6901, good evening.
Are we on the air?
Yes, we are.
Well, I just wanted to get one thing straight. This is Noel.
Yeah?
A couple weeks ago, I said something that I just wanted to clear up.
Okay.
And I said, I want to be a plumb.
A what?
A-P-L-O-M-B.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's...
I'm sure glad you cleared that up. Good evening.
Eric.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Not much. What's up?
Oh, not much. So, listen, I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Are you the editor of a, what do you call it, a computer hacking... magazine?
Well, yes, but that doesn't really tie into what we're saying, but...
I really don't know what the topic was. I just got home a couple minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
It was, you know, on the phone calling in. What is the topic for tonight?
We're talking about putting stickers on records.
Oh, labeling.
Labeling, yeah. What do you think of that?
Well, it's, nobody's going to listen to it. I think it's just a waste of money. Seriously.
Well, you know, people will listen, though. I mean,
well,
certain record stores won't stock records that are stickered, for instance.
Yeah.
And then you won't be able to get the record that you want to be able to buy.
Yeah. I really don't think, you know, that the teenagers are going to say, if anything, I think it's going to make them want to buy it more.
Well, yes, yeah, one of the points we just made, actually, that they might be buying the records then for the wrong reason. They'll buy records that just have stickers on them and nothing else.
Yeah, just for the obscenities, and, you know, I really don't think it would help too much.
Uh-huh.
But then again, you know, if the parents looked at it and said, you ain't buying this, took a stand, then maybe it just might work.
Well, I think it's more than just saying, don't buy this. Say why, you know, you got to instill values in people.
Yeah.
And just prohibiting things isn't really going to instill any values at all.
Yeah.
Except,
the law and not enforcing it.
The only value it's going to instill is overthrowing the fascist regime or something like that. That's what people eventually wind up doing.
Yes.
Anything else on your mind?
Well, to change the topic a little, I was wondering if you supported the idea of a united Germany.
Well, actually, I was not changing the topic because that's what we started off the show with.
As I said before, I just didn't.
Well, the magical thing about radio is people are always tuning in and tuning out. Unfortunately, I don't have that option right now, but united Germany, you know, I can't help but be a little worried about the speed at which things are going, but... At the same time, if you know, if everybody keeps an eye on the situation, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. To say that it is a bad thing means that you're saying that whenever Germans get power, they're going to abuse it.
Yeah.
And that's a racist statement, no matter how you look at it.
The thing I worry about, though, is I hear these little skinhead pockets of people springing up among Germany. And that's basically what happened, you know, in the beginning of, you know, before Hitler took power.
Right. Well, you notice most of those skinheads are in East Germany.
Germany. And now that they're uniting, they're forming together. It doesn't sound right to me.
Well, I think the reason that you see so many of them in East Germany is because they haven't been taught the history.
They've been suppressed.
The history has been suppressed of what Germany really did during World War II that hasn't really been admitted in East Germany. It's starting to be now, but what you're seeing is a reaction to what these people feel is an injustice against them, the way Germany has been treated by the world. If that can be corrected, then hopefully that will be you know, wiped out slowly. Yes. But you see skinheads in New York City, too, you know.
Yeah, they're basically all over it. They're not really that big of groups. And then in some places you go down south, they're bigger. And you go to Alaska, I mean, you ain't going to find nothing there. But, you know, basically, I really don't know. I have to wait and see.
Well, I'll tell you this. We're living through some of the most interesting periods of this century. And
I agree with you.
Yeah, you got to read the papers and watch the news on TV because it's just it's amazing.
Yeah.
If you got the chance to go over there too, take it because I just can't imagine how things can change anymore. You know,
yeah.
It's just so incredible to be around this time of history.
And hopefully in 50 years I'll be able to say yes, I lived through this period of time and I saw this happen and
it was for the good. You know, I think that that we're approaching a period in time where people seem to be opening up more, you know, as nations and as people, and they're realizing the importance of dialogue and of mutual respect.
Yeah.
So let's hope it goes somewhere.
Yeah, I hope it brings us somewhere.
All right, thanks for calling.
No problem, take care.
I feel rather positive now.
Yes, yeah. You know, and it's interesting you talk about that. It could very well be that there is a more of a sense of striving for mutual respect internationally, yet the irony to me is that it seems that within this country...
Mm-hmm.
That there seems to be a heightening of overt racial and ethnic tensions. And I'm not saying that that's hopeless. I'm not saying that it can't be reversed, but it's interesting how...
Yeah, that's a very good point because...
That's taking place.
You can't say it's not happening. It is happening. It's happening all around us. There's more incidents of racial attacks than there were 10 years ago. And you have to wonder, and I'd like to know if any of our listeners have any insight. Why is this? Now, in today's paper, there's an article about the State University at Old Westbury, which is our sister campus in Nassau County, citing a virtual explosion of racial, religious, and gender-based incidents. President Eudora Pettigrew yesterday welcomed 100 educators to a conference on bias on college campuses at the State University at Old Westbury. Women and people of color are being brutally victimized in today's society, she said. It's clear to me that we're regressing on these issues. We've heard little from Washington. It's up to us in higher education to take steps and to take a hard look at what is happening on our campuses. And speaker after speaker echoed her concern, stressing a need for members of different groups to get to know each other and the cultures that make up this country. And, you know, we really are lucky to have so many different cultures
mm-hmm.
and lifestyles to be exposed to because... You know, when you're one homogenous group of people, then that's where the bigotry and the closed-mindedness set in.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
And if you look back on history, that's where it all begins, when you have one group of people that believes they're supreme, you know, and nobody is immune from this. When you have such a circumstance where that kind of environment is able to flourish, then you have problems because... The other groups don't disappear. They're around, and then they'll get blamed for all kinds of things. And when they come in contact with this alleged superior group, all kinds of nasty things happen. When you have a heterogeneous society filled with many, many different kinds of people and different ways of looking at things, and these different people respect each other, even though they're different, that's where you learn. That's what life is all about.
That's right. And where you have, I'm sure you would add, a free range of expression.
Mm-hmm.
Because when that, getting back to our topic of free speech and the pornography laws, when it reaches a point, and some people who, let's say, don't like pornography may feel, well, good, the pornography is not here. But once, as Eric said before, once the pornography goes, then the other forms of expression start to go. And when you reach a point where that starts to happen... And there's more and more repression of an exchange of ideas. There's less and less you can find out about not only your own culture but about other cultures, and you can be kept more and more in a vacuum about what's really going on around you, and that can lead to more repression. That can lead to oppression of different groups, and you start to lose touch with reality altogether.
Yeah, it's kind of. Kind of a microcosm here at USB because we're a radio station that does so many different things in the course of a day, and all of the programs that are on, we all kind of have a mutual respect for each other. You know, the the reggae program and the African beat and Raz's show coming up at midnight, heavy metal, the polka show, the Chinese hour. You know, we're all in here. We're all working on our own programs, and we all have something different to say. And we all respect each other's rights to say it, and we all have the opportunity to say it. So this radio station is kind of like a little microcosm of what America can be. But again, I don't want to attack commercial radio or more than they deserve to be attacked. But there is another way that America can be, and that's one homogenous thing that's always the same. You know, where you just do one thing, and that's the only thing you know, and that's the only thing you're exposed to, and that's the only thing you want other people to hear. You know, that's kind of why you have to be open up. You know, if you tune into a particular program here on USB, keep the dial set a little longer, listen to something else, and you might find yourself opened up, because that's how most of us here get exposed to other things, just by listening a little longer. You know, that should be our phrase, listen a little longer.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a few more calls. Good evening. Are you there? Wake up.
Tell the joke.
Huh? Oh, tell the joke. Yeah, we haven't let him off the hook yet.
No, really, I got to tell you.
Thank you. We have another vote.
I got to tell you, we might be exposed to legal action if I did.
Fine, all the better.
And this is my own. I'm not. Nobody is forcing me not to say it. I just have to.
Well. You may not know this, Jim, but I can see through the window that there are several of the security people here. They have locked the door, and you're not going anywhere.
That's okay with me. I'll be happy to tell anybody who's here now, or again, if the caller wants...
Jim, we're all family.
If you put the caller on hold, I'll be happy to go talk with them off the air now and tell them the joke. More than happy to.
Jim, you're going to be here taking phone calls until 5 in the morning.
No. If this caller would like, I'd be more than happy to tell
him. The only thing I can do is make it even worse. Now, I would say probably something like you put a sign on a door saying, absolutely do not enter here, except the door is on the top of the Health Science Center leading outside. And, of course, everybody walks to the door and plummets to their death. But that would entail a visit to the hospital or at least the morgue or something. But you said it wasn't as bad as that.
Well, not as bad. Well, it depends. Not a physical type of injury, but it could have tumultuous repercussions for somebody who's not very stable from a mental standpoint.
Scrambling. We're talking about
right, here. And it doesn't. It's not really going to prove. I really don't have to. Didn't really have to tell the practical joke to. Prove my point, but again, if I have like the call that's on the line, if your curiosity's piqued, I'll be happy to. If Eric will just put you on hold,
you're trying to tell us that inside your head, you have the power to mess somebody up mentally.
No, I'm just saying that I wouldn't do it. It's just that if somebody actually acts on this suggestion, it might not be a nice thing. And if somebody finds out who did it, and they find out where they heard it. It might not. Let's just say that the importance of WUSB as a means of expression is more important to me whether the joke gets told, and if it ends up infringing upon WUSB, if somebody takes some kind of legal action against us, it wouldn't.
Jim,
you know,
I think
I don't have the money
nothing,
to be able to cover
nothing
it.
Short of self censorship. That's what that is.
But there's a difference between
self censorship. I think it's a sorry day when some guy should
right,
happen on our airwaves.
I have a right to censor myself.
No, you
I did
don't.
Just
you
before.
Have no right to censor
I
yourself.
I said what the.
You can't censor
yourself. And that's self-censorship
that was
right
me
there.
Turning off your dial.
No, it
again.
Wasn't.
I'm getting pretty
I stopped
sick of
myself
doing that.
In mid-word
yeah,
there.
Right.
And I'm not trying to tease anybody here. I certainly, it wasn't my intent. And that's why if this caller called, I'm bothered to call. I'll be happy to tell the caller.
Jim, you have a lot of angry listeners out there right
no,
now.
No, I don't.
A lot of angry
listeners.
No, want
there,
to hear this
anything,
practical joke.
If anything, the caller might be angry at you that you're not putting him on hold, letting me go to a different studio, and I'll tell him the practical joke off the air.
Jim, we don't believe in rationing information like so much.
I'm not rationing information. I have a right not to say something on the air.
No, you don't have that right.
Yes, I do.
As long as you are.
That's the heart of the matter. You can't. Look, Eric, you can't force people. You shouldn't be able to force people not to say things, and you shouldn't be able to force people to say things.
Well, at this radio station, you have no right to suppress anything.
No, you can't. No, where did you come up with that? Where in the WUSB charter or bylaws or regulations does it say that I must say everything you want me to say?
Bring the charter in here, please.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Wiener's causing trouble. trouble again.
I'd like, that's right, that's right. But if this caller wants, all Eric has to do is put you on hold, tell me the line you're on, I'll walk into another room and I'll describe the whole joke to you.
Dude,
in
there is nothing, I can't imagine that
detail.
It's as bad as what you seem to be saying could
well,
be. Well, I mean, I've told Matt, there's no practical joke I would tell.
Yeah, but if I that, give somebody...
Including crazy gluing somebody's tires to the driveway, okay?
But I don't know...
Imagine that, you leave all four tires there as you
yeah,
back out on your
rims.
That's
a nice thing to do.
That's a lot of fun, but...
you're certainly not advocating it,
I don't
you?
Have trouble saying that over
But you're
there.
Not advocating it,
of course
are you?
Not. And I,
of course
I think
not.
We're telling people not to do these things.
That's right.
So I think if you don't tell somebody not to doing this, Jim,
yeah,
not to do this, Jim, you're pretty much advocating it.
No, that's not true either.
I don't
Eric.
Think that's the message you want to convey, is
Eric,
it?
it's not the message I'm conveying. And again, if the caller is still there, all Eric has to do is put you on hold,
mm-hmm.
and I'll go in and I'll tell you the joke on the telephone.
It's probably
okay?
not even that funny.
Well, I think it's very funny, but
you have a warped sense of humor,
yeah, but
to say
see,
the least.
True, but I wouldn't actually do it, you see. But there might be people out there who
Tell
will
me,
do
is
it.
Is this something you thought of yourself or something
no,
you learned?
Something somebody told me.
Where did you hear about it?
A friend of mine told me.
Did they actually do it?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I really don't know if they did.
Let's see who else is here. Good evening.
So I was wondering, are you ever going to do a topic about the Bensonhurst trial?
You know, I'd like to do that. Maybe next week.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
I want to hear the joke. In fact, I can tell it to him.
Okay, just ask Eric to put you on hold. I'll go in and I'll tell you the joke.
Okay.
And sir, after... Well, just go in there. Go in there and take care of it.
Let me just see which line it's. I'll be right there to speak with you.
Go ahead.
Let me just see
632. It's line two there.
Okay, thank you.
632-6901.
The radio turned up too, Eric. So
area code 516. Okay, I'm going to take another call. Good evening.
It's just the voice of doom.
It's the voice of doom. You know, where have you been?
We were
getting no phone calls before, and I was hoping you would call and rescue us with something pessimistic.
Oh, good. Pessimistic?
Well, pessimism brings in the calls. I don't know why that is, but it does.
It is. We're running into a totalitarianistic society here.
Well, we certainly are. You know, Albania is freeing up, and we're closing down. That's what
I don't think
before.
You know how bad it is.
Well, it's getting... I don't know why. You know, that's the question I keep asking is why? Why is this happening now? Why is this happening to me? Why is it happening now? That's the question I have.
You know, that's a good question. And, but the thing of it is, I saw your name in Newsday this week, so now we know what you do for a living.
Well, yeah, the truth comes out, I guess.
Yes, indeed. And they printed my letter this week, and they edited my letter.
Did they?
I think Newsday has no guts. I think Newsday
what,
is spineless.
What day did your letter come out?
Came out, I think... the same day that you were mentioned in
really?
The paper.
Well, that's good.
They cut out a very major... They took the horsepower out of my letter.
Well, that's what they're there for. What was your letter about? First of all, congratulations on getting a letter published, and I hope more people write letters to their newspapers.
Well, I think I've seen three letters in the years I've read that paper with your name under it.
Yeah, I don't know how that keeps happening, but I told them if it shows up again, I'm going to sue them, but never mind that. Tell me about your letter.
Well, it was just about what I always talk about. The Earth Day, and everybody missed the point.
Uh-huh.
Because people were standing there on TV. I saw them saying, oh, we want a better world for our children.
You know, I saw... I skipped over it. I saw the Earth Day letter. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. But I've got it at home, so I'll...
It was population.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, I got so mad because the next day, right after they printed my letter and edited it, they had the Pope in there, and they quoted him... practically word for word what I said, and they wouldn't write it.
So the Pope reads Newsday?
No, they quoted him.
Saying what you...
All right, look, here's the paragraph I left out.
Okay, let's read it.
That they left out. It's not too long. You listen to this, and you'll see why they left it out. But I only use it as an example. Okay. Religion plays a major factor in this problem, since many people continue to have children because the church expects them to. The Vatican seems totally unaware of the population explosion as they continue to be against the use of birth control. Theologians are increasingly recognizing the social and moral disaster a contraceptive mentality can lead to, says Cardinal Cagnan. But this mentality has caused and continues to cause environmental havoc as the population increases. The time has come for the Church to realize that the planet is finite and cannot support non-stop population growth. They cut that paragraph out.
Well,
so that pissed me off.
that's a paragraph I don't think they should have cut out, because that's a very it's a controversial statement, and that's what they should have left in.
Well, I called them about that, and they rationalized and hemmed and hawed and waffled their way out of it. But the thing of it is, the next day, the Pope was in the paper on page 7, I think it was Friday or Thursday, I can't remember exactly which day it was, and he went down to Mexico and preached this exact thing that I said about the moral, the contraceptive mentality can lead to a moral disaster. You can't go against God's will. You've got to have kids. Don't worry about it. They're dying down there from air pollution. There's so many people in such a small area congested. People are just, they can't support themselves. They have a, it's a total disaster in Mexico, and he's down there exacerbating the situation.
Okay, let me just break in for 1 second, because Jim is off the phone with the caller. He has told the caller the practical joke. Did you, in fact, tell the caller the practical joke, Jim?
Yes, I did.
Okay, now, I'd like to ask that caller to please call us and tell us the practical joke now, so we can share it with everybody. 632-6901, let it be on your head. And and you can say where you heard it, too.
Yeah, because the phone company's listening in.
That's right, and the phone company could get charged with a crime if this latest law that they want to pass gets passed. Can you imagine that, charging the phone company with a crime? If something illegal or obscene goes on?
Never do it, because they got so much money they could get their way out of it.
Well, they won't do it to them, but they'll do it to smaller organizations, believe me.
Why are you against pornography?
Sorry?
Why are you against pornography? You say that you're against it. Why?
Well, I'm not against its existence, but I don't really, you know, I'm not that into its presence. Let's put it that way.
Well, I know that it goes to an extreme. It's everybody has their own personal opinion of what's erotic and what's pornography.
Right. It's their own personal opinion. That's really what it boils down to.
The thing of it is, nobody ever seems to really say what it really is. Like, a lot of men use it as a masturbatory aid, and some people out there are probably giggling and going ha 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 and this and that. But let's face up to the fact that that's really what it's used for. I mean, that's what its purpose seems to be, because it just sells. It just look at the magazine racks, and it just,
yeah, you know, that's not going to change unless people's values change, and you're not going to change people's values by making things illegal. That's going to have to be the last word, because we've got to go.
Maybe we can fit one more person in.
No, we can't.
Get to hear much tonight.
Yeah, the phones have been slow tonight. I don't know why. Maybe people are studying too hard for finals and things like that. I don't know, but we'll be back again next week. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it's good to have you there as the liaison between the common people and the government. Let us know what's going on.
Well, I feel like I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, but never mind that. Thanks for calling. And that's going to just about do it for us, talking about record labels and censorship and all that kind of thing. Now, speaking of censorship, Raz is here with Power Surge, and I'll bet every single one of Raz's records would have a sticker on it, right? Right?
Of course.
Of course. So, folks, you Raz people out there, you keep aware of this situation, because if they sticker your records, they might just as well be banning them from certain places.
Raz might have to change his show, the name of his show, from Power Surge to Sticker Surge.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, I got a scare because I heard somebody go on the air and say that they were going to be playing religious music during Raz's show. Unfortunately, they got kicked off, but it almost happened. It almost happened, and it could happen, unless we all stay awake, you know, and read the papers, know what's going on, and don't let them pass these things without at least getting a fight. Thanks, Jim, for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, and I'll be back next week, God willing. Am I allowed to say that on the air?
I hope so.
Okay. See you next week.
Mushrooming home in a crowd, I'm alone. Close your eyes. There is
Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Modell Shopping Mall in Center Reach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
First station of the 90s, WUSB Stony Brook. Power Surge is coming up in just a few moments. First, a look at the WUSB concert billboard. And here's and now that I found my place, here goes. Sunday, May 13th, the Scofflaws will be at New York Avenue. Wednesday, May 16th, they might be Giants. And Jack Ruby's will be at the Beacon Theater, and Lisa Stansfield will be at the New Ritz. Thursday, May 17th, House of Love will be at Marquee. Zavuki Mew will be at the Bottom Line. Soundbite House will be at Right Track Inn. Flat Duo Jets will be at Maxwell's.
Night, everybody.
Energy Orchard will be at Woody's.
Night, Jen.
Good night. Friday, May 18th, Fall will be at New Ritz. Raging Slab and Law and Order will be at Sundance. Fluid and Digits will be at Woody's. World Party will be at Symphony Space. Did you leave it out in the...
I'm sitting on my coat.
Oh, I'm sitting on it?
Yeah,
oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, anytime. Right. Good night. Take care. Anyway, Friday, May 18th, let's see. It's Raging Slab and Law and Order at New Ritz. It's Fall. Fall at New Ritz. Raging Slab and Law and Order at Sundance. Fluid and Digits at Woody's. World Party at Symphony Space. Saturday, May 19th, Dr. John will be at IMAC. Social Distortion and Gang Green will be at the Marquee. Morbid Angel, Biohazard, and Ripping Corpse will be at Sundance. The Toasters, the Scatolites, Bop Harvey, and New York Citizens will be at the New Ritz. Sunday, May 20th, it's the Isley Brothers and Angela Winbush at the Westbury Music Fair. Monday, May 21st, Dizzy Gillespie at Lone Star Roadhouse. Tuesday, May 22nd, Diana Ross at the Westbury Music Fair. Psychofunkapus at Woody's. Wednesday, May 23rd, Diana Ross at Westbury Music Fair, as well as Thursday, May 24th.
Excuse me, is this on tape?
Also on... I guess not. Also on...
Okay,
let me check.
Fine,
no,
you.
There's no mylar in my cheeks. Thursday, May 24th, Diana Ross at the Westbury Music Fair, and Dr. John at the Lone Star Roadhouse. Friday, May 25th, it's Mission UK and Wonder Stuff. Tickets from the canceled show will be honored, and that will be at the New Ritz. Diana Ross will be at Westbury Music Fair. The Gun Bunnies and Carnies will be at Woody's. Dr. John will be at the Lone Star Roadhouse. And the Scofflaws will be at Hugo's Valley. On Saturday, May 26th, Hugo's Valley.
Thank you.
That'll be the Scofflaws, Hugo's Valley on Friday, May 25th. On Saturday, May 26th, finally, it'll be Angela Beaufield with two shows at 8 and 10:30 p.m. at IMAC. Diana Ross at the Westbury Music Fair. And Blues Traveler and Spin Doctors at Marquee. And that's the WUSB concert billboard, which can be heard on weekends at noon and midnight, and during the week at 3 and 9 a.m. and 4:30 and 10 p.m. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. And don't forget to have fun, everybody.
Yeah.
Power. A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively.